Take it into consideration, yes. But how do you take into consideration and still have SIM cards?
The one thing that's not on here that I would urge anybody, if you have grandchildren especially, is, because I know what you do, soldiers who have been to the middle of the battle are very sensitive to gunshots. And when these kids buy these cats and these toy guns that sounds like guns, first of all, it's not healthy for us to hear it because we don't know if it's real. And secondly, people with PTSD and soldiers, whatever, tell them not to see it. Okay? By the way, it's interesting. Shefter says little children who look forward to getting dressed up all year round should get dressed up. But adults, I usually get dressed up because I'm a little child inside. But I'm not going to get dressed up this year. Because, even though I had a great costume. But that's an example. They gave a specific example. You read it, you do whatever you want. Okay? Are we ready to start? Okay. Now, we're going to... It's interesting that even though we're doing Parshat HaShavua, obviously Purim, well, we'll talk about that next week. No, that's next week. Okay. This is a shiur I heard many, many years ago about something that you would think is very esoteric. And then when I pulled it out, I looked back at this. This is more relevant this year than any other year. And you'll see what I'm talking about. Why? And you'll see why Purim is the most relevant holiday of the year, based on the shiur, based on a lot of things, than any other holiday. Okay, as well. So that's why I figured I'd do this as a shiur. Certainly, we're not going to remember Simchas Torah as the, that's what the war represents. So we'll talk about it, okay? Okay, so where did we start? Okay, we're going to start. I really should start with source number two, not number one. After we read the Megillah, well, I'll start out with a personal thing for years. People ask me, why did I move to Jerusalem when I came on Aliyah? Right? It doesn't apply this year. Why did I move to Jerusalem? I said so I could read the Megillah on a full stomach. Because most people read the Megillah, they're fasting, right? They're like this, and they want to eat. People fast, and they don't pay attention to them much. It's not as much as an experience. Okay, this year I can't use that excuse because everybody fasts on Thursday. Okay, but the reason I say that is the following: even though we read the Megillah, because we are so familiar with it, we get a little bored, or a lot bored, but especially by the one time of Haman, etc. And we don't pay attention to the Megillah and the story as much as we should have because we think it's a childlike story. I don't mean politics are very adult, right? We know that in the last 2,000 years, there's so many parties in the Megillah, right? There are also many parties, they used to say in Russia. Of course there are parties, everybody belongs to the party. Anyway, but the point is that over parties and social events, that's when things got decided. So there are a lot of comparisons and things that are similar. I remember when Trump got elected, it says, there's a machloket in the Gemara, and Rashi says, some think that Ahasuerus was a genius, some think that feel he was a dummy, right? So they said, Trump is Ahasuerus, and all kinds of stuff like that. Because, we try to tend to think, but we don't look a little deeper into the lessons, and if we learn this, I think we'll see how relevant it is to our lives. Okay, that's number one. Number two, when I say we run out of shul, whether you're eating or not eating, there's a part right after the Megillah, before we say Aleinu, that everybody mumbles, and then they disjointly sing a little song called Shoshana Yaakov, right? And that's it. What is Shoshana Yaakov? Where does it come from? What does it mean? Nobody pays attention, right? It's like Moses' Torah, right? We're going to see that it's not like Moel's Tzur for many reasons. First of all, if you read Moel's Tzur, especially in the translation, it's a clear story of five different destructions, and there's no place in Jewish law that says you have to sing Moel's Tzur. But source number two says, Tzarech Shiyomar Arur Haman Baruch Mordechai. Okay? You have to say the words, Arur Haman, cursed be Haman, Baruch Mordechai. One week I'm going to prepare everything in English so you won't have that reaction, okay? For you. And for me. Okay, so source number two. No, it's okay. You have to bless Mordechai, curse Haman, Arura Zeresh, curse Zeresh, the wife of Mordechai, of Haman, Rucha Esther is to be blessed. Arua Mikol Solein Israel, all the people who hate the Jews to be cursed. Right, Ruchim Chalama Aminim, Mitzorach Yomar, the very end of the Shoshanat Yaakov, Gam Charvona Zolato, which we hopefully have time for. Charvona should be remembered for good. Who was Charvona? Anybody know who Charvona was?
He was one of the servants.
Yeah, but he's an important guy. I thought you guys know this. Did you know the story?
The butler?
Okay. At the very beginning of the Megillah, we're not going to go through the whole Megillah, obviously. That's why they call it a Megillah. It's a Megillah, right? They call it Megillah. At the very beginning, he has these advisors. And one of his advisors is Charvona. Okay? Then, at the very least opportune time in Haman's life, right? There's a guy that says, he's at the palace, and Esther calls him out and says, there's a guy who's trying to destroy my people, the Jewish people. There is. Who is it? He says, Haman. At that moment, Charvona comes in and says, Haman already built the gallows, 50 amot, to kill all the Jews. At that moment. And Ahasuerus says, what? Does anybody know? Use those gallows to kill Haman immediately. And so it happened. Okay? Again, I see we have a lot of work to do, but it'll be very interesting because and it says Charvona should be remembered for good because he's at the right place, the right time. Okay. Now, I think maybe we should have gone for the Megillah because if there's, I don't know, Charvona, whatever. There's a paragraph, it's called a piyut. In the last 200 years, piyutim have come to disuse. What do I mean by piyutim come to disuse? What is a piyut? It's a liturgical poem, right? Which, you know what slichot are? When we say slichot before Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, those are piyutim. And 99.99% of the people who say it have no idea what to say. I'm not talking about the people who don't say it. Nobody studies these beautiful poems. And in every davening, there used to be, you never got out of shul on 200, 300 years ago on Rosh Hashanah, on Pesach, Shavuot, etc., till 12, 1 o'clock. Because for every holiday, there were piyutim that art school, when they first put out their books, they have the piyutim in the back, right? Many German communities have continued to say piyutim, they're the last ones that say them. And there are piyutim. These all of Tisha B'Av, right? We read their piyutim, and again, we are ignorant of piyutim, and that's something that's fallen out of disuse. This is a piyut about the story of Purim, and what we're going to see is having the piyut in English, by the way, translated. We will see how we can learn about the story of Purim through the eyes of the Paitan, okay? Who wrote this piyut? So I did a little research, and we have no idea, okay? Some say it goes back all the way to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, more than 2,000 years, and it was always said after the Megillah. But we just read source number two, the reason that we say, it's the end of a long piyut that starts with Asher Hini, with an Aleph, and it goes Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, like many piyutim. And then the last two lines, the Shin and the Taf, is Shoshanat Yaakov, Tshuatam, and then they add a few verses. But these particular verses are the ones that people know today. And we're going to see if we learn them, And every single word is packed with ideas that normally we wouldn't have any idea what it's talking about unless you have Amzel explain it, okay? So therefore, we're gonna go through it, okay? And I'll give you an example in the very first, the very first source. It says there are a lot of different colors and garments. Last year, those of you, by the way, a lot of the things that I say, not only from year to year, from sheer to sheer, will repeat themselves. You'll see in a few minutes. But last year I said, when we talked about the karpas on Rosh Hashanah,
Pesach,
what is the karpas? Why do we call it karpas? I said karpas is mentioned only once in the whole Tanakh. Where is it mentioned? Source number one. Chur, karpas, utchelet. This is talking about the royal garments, right? Chur is, I'm not sure what chur is. Karpas, they say, is like a whitish thing. Techelet, some say it's an actual garment, some say it's just a blue. Achuz b'chavli boots, I'm not going to translate it, was pulled together by a certain other garment. The argaman is like a purplish garment, adi lechesef, silver, v'amud eshe. This is the royal garment. Some people analyze this in light of our parsha, or parsha tzaveh, last week, because they think that, according to some, the Midrash says that he wore specifically the vestments of the Kohen Gadol, because he wanted to show the his royalty comes from the Jews, etc., just like the folk is modeled after this as well. So that's the beginning, that's the very first sixth verse of the covenant. Later on, if you remember, again, if you don't remember, I apologize if you, this is easy for you, and you know it, and I want you to repeat it. If you don't, I'm glad I'm explaining it to you. Later on, when Achashverosh can't sleep at night, right? The king's sleep was disturbed, and he had nothing to do, so they didn't have Netzuks at that time. So instead of opening up Netzuks, it says, bring me the royal, all the royal decrees. I want to read them over again, okay? That was his Netzuks. They read the royal decree, and they say that there was two people, Bigthan and Teresh, who wanted to kill you, Achashverosh, and your life was saved by a guy named Mordechai. We knew about basically because he was the uncle of one of his wives, Esther, okay? And he says, what was done for this guy, right? Nothing. At the same time, and we'll come back to this theme, Haman was walking by and decided, and he sees the lights on, he goes into Haman, he wanted to tell him how he was going to destroy the Jewish people, which had been signed, sealed, and delivered. And then Achashverosh says to Haman, if you want to honor somebody and really show that they are special, what would you do? And of course, Haman thinks he's talking about him. And so he says, in Haman's eyes at least, this is the greatest, if you say, what would be the greatest thing if you would just, like go backstage passes to Taylor Swift. You know, to some people that would be like the greatest thing you could do to honor them, etc., etc. The greatest thing for Haman would dress like the king. And he would be dressed exactly like the king, and he would be going and he would be the pseudo-king, at least to this parade. Okay, make a parade. Okay, and what did he say? Thinking that it would be him, he said, get dressed up like the king, whatever. He says, good idea. Now you arrange it all, and you lead Mordechai. And then it says, and this is source number one, Mordechai yatzami d'fnei ha-melech. Mordechai went out in the garments of the king, the levush malchut. Look what he says now. The reason I brought the first one and the second one, it's not exactly the same. Tchelet, the first one is tchelet, we don't have chur and karpas. The chur, but it says chur is second, but it doesn't have karpas. The ateret zahav d'olav, the achribut, the argaman. Okay? Ha'ir Shushan sa'alav samecha. Ha'ir Shushan, the city was erupted in great
happiness.
Now, most of the Mefarshim learn is talking about the Jews because of Mordechai. Having another parade, you ever lived in New York? Every Sunday there's a different parade of a different group. Right? If it's your group, okay, you come out and you watch the Israeli Day Parade, but there's a Puerto Rican parade, and there's a gay parade, and there's this parade. Okay, you know, another parade. But the Jews specifically, especially what was happening at that time, which was 6 months before the actual battle. And as I said, by Yudim, I saw specifically the Yudim. Okay, so the city was grateful, but the Yudim especially. Okay. What Shoshana Yaakov was going to do, and I'm going to go through line by line. First of all, read the whole line. And then we'll see how each line is a very, very deep concept in Jewish values. That's the reason that we're here. Okay? So, just like the first word, okay? Shoshanat Yaakov, which means?
The Rose of Yaakov.
Okay? What's the problem? I mean, not problem. What immediately, right? Okay, what's the connection? Why do they call it Shoshanat Yaakov? I hope you make the connection to what we just read. Okay? Shoshanat Yaakov, similar to the word
Shushan.
Okay? Shushan. Here's Shushan, so Allah Sameha. Shoshanat Yaakov. Why was it called? I mean, I'm just going to go through questions then, we're going to go back to all of these. Why was it called Yaakov and not Shoshanat Yisrael? Yaakov. We call B'nai Yisrael or B'nai Yaakov today?
B'nei Yisrael.
Why Shoshana Yaakov? Yeah, not Israel. So Halav Esamecha, they were grateful. Bir Otam Yachad. It says that the city saw Mordechai, or the Jews saw Mordechai, and all these garments. It doesn't say Yachad, it doesn't say they were united or together at the same place, same time. Yachad means, see, he's adding things. And that colors everything we're going to see about the whole Megillah. But what did they see? What is the only garment they saw? No. Saw second line, third and fourth word. Exalted when they beheld Mordechai. Techelet Mordechai, garbed in royal blue. Does it say he was garbed in royal blue?
No.
It says he was in royal blue. But it also says he was in this, he was in gold, and he was this. But all they saw was the blue. Come back. Your salvation has been forever. Is their salvation forever? The Jews never went back to any kinds of problems since Purim. But the guy wrote it says it was forever. V'tikva tam, which speaks to us today, the word hatikva, right? The hope. V'chol davar, every generation we have always never lost hope. Sound familiar? Olo avda. Okay. Never be embarrassed about believing in God. All right. You will not be put to shame, like Mordechai was. Okay. The lo yikamu, and that's why I'm not going to spend so much time on this particular line. Right. Anyone who trusts in God will never be disgraced. Okay. Then we see Arur Haman. This is what we talked about before. Arur Haman should be caged by D. Haman should be cursed. Because he wanted to destroy us. Baruch Mordechai HaYehudi. Mordechai was called HaYehudi. By the way, Mordechai was called the first person ever called Yehudi in the history of the world, who was not from the tribe of Judah. In other words, till Mordechai, everybody who was Yehudi came from the tribe of Judah. The last two tribes that were exiled 70 years earlier were Benjamin and Judah, both the last two tribes. And nevertheless, Mordechai, we know, is from what tribe? All you have to do is look in the Megillah, I'm not making it.
Yeah.
What?
Binyamin,
right? Each Yemini. Binyamin is Yemini, okay? So how is he called Yehudi? So all the Mefarshim, yes, this is the first time Jews are called Jews. Okay? Arura Zeresh. Zeresh is the wife who we'll see in a moment, a few moments. That she is, even though she was to be cursed, she is very profound. Eshet Mafchidi, she was the wife of the person who scared us, who, right? Brucha Esther Ba'adi, Esther is to be blessed because of what she did, and what she interceded and saved the Jewish people. The Gam Karvan is a Holato. Okay, now you know where that came from, source number two. Okay, so that's all. Now, Shoshana in Hebrew today is
a rose.
Okay, why did he pick the? Okay, who is Shoshana in the Shoshana Yaakov?
Esther.
No. Good guess. Right? Who is Shoshana Yaakov? The Jewish people. How do I know that's true? Where are the Jewish people called Shoshana? Right? Not just the people of Shushan. Obviously, it's a play on the word Shushan, but it means the Jewish people are called Shoshana. And this is, to me, all I had to read was source four and remember the pasuk, and I say, we're here. What do we see in Shir HaShirim? Very famous pasuk. Kishoshana ben ha'ochim kein ra'yati ben ha'banot. Like the rose is among the thorns, right? So too is my beloved. This is a beloved among the all the other women, right? She's so special. Correct? This is Shir HaShirim, the relationship of God to the Jewish people, etc., etc. What hit me immediately was, today, 2024, who is Kishoshana Bein HaChochim? There's Chochim in Lebanon, Chochim in Gaza, Chochim in Egypt, Chochim. Every place you look around us, there's Chochim.
What's Chochim?
Thorns. Huh. People who want to, with their pointed thorns, who can hurt us, right? And the Jewish people is Kishoshana Bein HaChochim. Never more relevant than today. Okay, then now, okay, we have peace treaties, etc., etc. Okay, but the idea of Kishoshana, and there's another reference to Shoshana, the Jewish people. King David says, "Lamnatzeach ala Shoshanim le David." Again, the Jewish people were called Shoshanim, are called the rose. Okay, again, every one of these we could spend 10 minutes on, but I want to, get some ideas here. Okay, now. Jacob in the Torah has two names, but everybody has two names. Avram's name was changed, Yitzchak's name remained the same, right? Yaakov's name was changed, Sarah's name was changed. What?
Yosef's name was changed.
Not really. Yosef was called in Egyptian stuff, not from there, but his name came was always Yosef among the Jewish people. Yoshua's name was changed. So every other person. Okay, so Esther was known as Hadassah, but everybody else in, we'll come back, maybe we have time to come back to that, everybody else in the Torah at least, once their name was changed, they became their new name forever. We never call anybody Avram anymore. We don't call. The only person who was not was Yaakov.
Right.
Yaakov is referred to in the Torah as Yaakov even after his name was changed. The question is why? And what does the name Yaakov symbolize in the Torah? And what does the name Yisrael symbolize?
Yisrael is more universal.
Okay.
And Yaakov is more personal.
Okay, that's one opinion, right? Let's see the sources and tell us. Okay, what happened? It says Yosef was torn away from his father, right? His favorite son, for 22 years. And Yaakov cannot be consoled, we know that, right? And then it says, Vayalu mi Mitzrayim, that when the brothers came back after they had, Yosef identified himself, and we're going to get to Purim in a few minutes. Vayavo Eretz Kanan, they came back to him, El Yaakov Avihem. He was known for 22 years, God had not appeared to him, he was known, he took the name again Yaakov because he was tremendously depressed. He was the pre-Israel Yaakov, okay? Vayagidu lo lemor, when they said to him, Oh Yosef Chai, we have proof Yosef is still alive, the Hiu Moshel b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, and he rules over all of Egypt, Vayafa libo, and his heart, we would say skip the beat, right, today, ki lo ha'min lahem, because he didn't believe them, how could it be 20 years and he's the king? Vayadavru elav b'chol libre Yosef, and it says he didn't believe them. They repeated everything Yosef had said to them. The simple words of the pasuk seem to point to the fact that he saw these wagons. So I'm not going to go through all the midrashim, but he saw this the wagons that Yosef had sent to him. And Yaakov. His spirit became,
lifted,
came back to what he was earlier. And then it says, Vayomer Yisrael, Once he realized that Yosef, yes, indeed, was alive, and Yosef was going to see him, he talks to them as Yisrael, no longer as Yaakov. Rav, od Yosef, b'ni chai, el chaver, men of a terem amu. Before I die, I want to go see my son Yaakov. Vayisa Yisrael. And therefore, he specifically, the Torah says he went as Yisrael. He went to Be'er Sheva, we had gone before, but his bat zvachim, and he brought sacrifices, the okay of Yitzhak to the father of his, to the God of his father. Watch this. Vayomer Elohim Yisrael, b'maralt ha'layla. God appeared to Yisrael in the night. Vayomer Yaakov Yaakov. He called him Yaakov, by Yom Hineni. Okay, and he says, I'm here to serve you, Hashem. By the way, Hineni is a word we could spend at least 2 shiurim on. But anyway, okay. So he felt like Israel, and God says, no, you're Yaakov. What made him Yaakov? And it goes on and says, you're going to go down to Mitzrayim, and your children will stay there, and then you're going to come back, etc., etc. From here, we identify Yaakov as the Jewish people who are going down to Galut. Even though Yaakov felt like Israel, he says, no, you're going to be Yaakov because you're going down to Egypt, and that's where you're going to live the rest of your life. So Yaakov always symbolizes, at least in, we see in the Torah, Yaakov going to Galut. Okay? This is extremely important to understand the context. Okay? Anybody know when Purim occurred? Anybody? Within 500 years. Let's put it this way. What was the major event in Jewish history?
70 AD. Oh, the destruction.
Not 70 AD.
No,
500. It happened before the Common Era.
Before the first
destruction of 86, maybe?
First very close. Okay. We know that. I'm not going to go through all the differences in the dates and the arguments or whatever. That it says in 586, approximately BCE, the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And in the 516 or 500, etc., the story of Purim happened. About 70 years after the destruction of the first temple. It was the first event in Jewish history after the destruction of the first temple. And that colors everything. Okay? So it was the first time that the Jews were in Galut. It's the only story in the entire Tanakh that happens in Galut once the Jews got to Israel. Everybody understand? Every other story is about the Jews in Israel. Jews in Israel, Jews in Israel. Purim is the only story, and that's going to be a significant part of what we're coming to, that the Jews are in Galut. 127 nations, 127 provinces, cities, all the Jews were in these 127. Okay? Okay, now, what's the difference between Yaakov and Yisrael? I jumped the gun a little bit. Okay, source number 6, when did Yaakov get the name Yisrael?
He fought
the angel, and he was on top. He was able to destroy his enemy, psychological enemy, physical enemy, etc., etc. Source number 6. Lo Yaakov Yehomero Shimcha, ki im Yisrael. It'll be called Yisrael. Ki sarita im Elokim, because you fought with God, whatever that means, v'im Hashem, and with people, v'atuchal, and you were successful. Where did he get the name Yaakov?
From the twins.
His parents.
The heel.
Because he's the heel, because he was always grabbing after him, he was always second, he was always trying to take what wasn't his, etc. That's source number 7. Okay? So that's why I brought all these sources. To say that Yaakov is obviously is not a very, how should I say, admiring name. Yisrael is much more prestigious. But it says, source number 8, when the Jews go down to Egypt for 400 years, right, that's when he is called, based on what we learned in source number 5, that's when he's called Yaakov. The Jew in Galut is called Yaakov. Okay? Why? First of all, we only got 2 words. Shoshanat Yaakov. Why is they called Yaakov? Because it's the Jew in Galut. But we're going to see that the story of Purim represents not only Purim, but every story of the Jew in Galut. Okay? Shoshanat Yaakov, even though they were in Galut, Nevertheless, we're going to go, okay, and source number 9 says the following, and this is important. Those of you who say Shema in the morning and the evening, after the Shema in the morning, we talk about what? Hashem Elokechem Emet, V'yatzir V'nachon, right? Talks about different kinds of attributes of God, which are very positive and uplifting. What do we say at night after the Shema? Emunah calls off. Where does that come from? Source number 9. Lehagid baboker chasdecha. When things are during the day, in the morning, what does that mean? Things are clear to us. We understand why things are happening. We can talk about God's greatness. Right? But we don't understand what's happening. Right? When the A200 completely has a complete failure on Simchas Torah, we don't understand what's happening. What do we talk about? We don't say how great God is that 1,200 people were killed. What do we talk about? It says the thing, Emunah Kabbalah. In the night, we talk about Leilot. Galut is always compared to night. Okay? And therefore, we say we don't understand why, but we still have Emunah. We haven't lost our faith. We're not happy. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. But when things are black, we have not lost our faith. That's what King David says, and that's what we say in the Shema, and that's what we're talking about in the context of Shoshana Yaakov. Now watch this. Shoshana Yaakov Tzahala V'Samecha, even though they were in Galut, even though it had been Beit HaMikdash had been destroyed, even though they're called Yaakov, they were still happy. It's possible to be happy even though you're in Galut.
Which one are you on?
What? First line.
Of which one?
Of source number 3. We're going to keep going back to source number 3. Shoshana Yaakov Tzahala V'Samecha. We were thrilled and joy with joy and exalted, even though we were in Galut. Why were we thrilled and exalted?
Because we had Emunah.
We had Emunah, but we are, there is a specific reason. 5 minutes ago, the Jewish people were dead. If Haman had his way, we wouldn't have a be here right now.
Nisan Mordechai.
What?
Nisan Mordechai and Tehillim.
Based on Mordechai, based on everything that happened. In other words, if Chas V'Shalom, God forbid, one of the countries where Jews are today, God forbid the Jews would be destroyed, right? Like we saw it in the 60s, 70s about the Russian, there's still other Jews in other countries, correct? Right? Even in Israel, I mean, there's still other Jews, right? In those 127 provinces, that was the whole kit and caboodle. That was everybody. If we have been destroyed in the time of Ahasuerus, that's all Jews, every place in the world. Okay? So obviously when we were not only destroyed, but we destroyed Haman and his enemies, etc., etc., we're obviously exuberant, exalted. Okay? Do you want me to say something?
No, I think.
Yes.
But there were Jews in the Eretz Israel at the time.
There were a few Jews who left. Most of them. When Ezra came back a few years later, very, very few Jews. They had the what do they call them? The Samaritans, whatever. But they have very few Jews. We don't see any shuls, any kind of observance. In fact, even the people who we brought back, the 40,000, 90% of them were Mechalei Shabbos, right? So it's you know. So there was nothing of a community, that's for sure, in Israel at the time. Maybe a few Jews.
There's Jews in Worms, and in Tunisia, in Germany.
But that's much later. It's later, later, later. We're talking about before the destruction. The first temple, right?
But this is 7 years after the destruction.
Right. So I'm not an expert in this part of history. These communities sprouted forth and were there, but it was certainly not before the common era that we heard about them. I don't know, maybe you're right. There's a tradition, they went to Ethiopia after Shlomo HaMelech, but we don't have communities like, Ethiopians don't have a tradition based on years like we can. Okay, let's go on, because we're never going to finish. Okay, we'll go as far as we can go. Okay. So, therefore, we see that Shoshana Yaakov, even though we're in Galut, in four words, talk about it for a half an hour. Even though we're in Galut, we could be, we were saved, right? Jewish people lives. Am Yisrael Chag, right? Now, Birotam Yachag. Yachad could mean they saw it together. Together could mean they were physically in one place, or it can mean that they spiritually saw it as one, right? They were unified, right? It has to be the second one, because we know there were Jews all over the place, not only in Shushan. So when they heard that Mordechai was dressed in Tchelet, they were totally unified as Jews. I'm going to come back to Tchelet because that's important to come back also. Chuvatam Hayita HaNetzach, which is, I'm going to go quickly, their victory was eternal. Okay, strange. Okay, let's go on. Okay. Let's go back to the story. In the story of Purim, the Jews were elated because they were invited to the palace, even though they were, quote, you know, an outside group. They were still invited to that 180-day, not all the days, but some of the days they were invited to that party of 180 days of Achashverosh. And according to many of the Farshim, there was even a kosher section in this party, right? And the Jews said, we've made it, we're part of the kingship, etc., etc. And they didn't realize that Haman was there. And again, I'm not going to go through the whole Megillah, but what happened? Haman was an egomaniac. Haman says everybody has to bow down to me, just like he wanted to go out like the king. And he made a thing, and when you see me, he's a powerful officer, he had a lot of money. When you see me, you have to bow down. So everybody bowed down, but they didn't want to get in trouble, they didn't want to be put in jail. It's like, you can't argue with Putin. Okay, so we won't argue. We'll love him, but what's the difference? He's going to be neglected anyway. All right. One guy says no. Mordechai. Jews don't bow down. It wasn't meant, etc., etc. People were upset at Mordechai because he was a leader for not bowing down, you know? And isn't that? Haman, the egomaniac, says, if Mordechai doesn't bow down, I'm going to destroy not Mordechai. If you put Mordechai in jail, the whole story wouldn't have happened and it would be logical. You don't want to bow down, you don't want to keep a law, okay, you go to jail the rest of your life. You go to the gulag, who this was killed now in the gulag, what's his name? Wow. Right, you're not going to, fine. But what did Mordechai do, Putin said, like Stalin, I'm not going to get rid of Mordechai, I'm going to get rid of every single Jew because of what one Jew did. Okay? But that's, you should understand the context. Source 11, Kolodei HaMelech HaShem B'Shar HaMelech, all the king, or the servants of the king who were in the area of the palace, Korim Mishtachamim Haman, they bowed down to Haman, Ki Chayim Tzivah Lo HaMelech, because the king said it's okay to make this, U'Mordechai Lo Yechurem Lo Yishtachamim, but Mordechai said no, even though we're in Galut, even though we're in Diaspora, even though I know I'm going to be consequences, I will not bow down, the Jew does not bow down, like an idol to a man, person, all right, and says Haman Hatzema, etc., etc. Now, okay, the rest of the Megillah goes on. I'm not going to explain the machinations and what happened, but all of a sudden, Haman has a bad day and comes home to his wife and says, you know, this guy Mordechai is getting to me, etc., etc. What does Zeresh say?
Beware.
He doesn't say beware, but what does he say? Look very carefully. It's one of the most important psukim in the 12. Saper Haman Zeresh Yishtol Chol Abam. He took the whole family. He needed sympathy. Asher Karo Vayomer Lav Chachamav Zeresh Yishtol. His advisors and Zeresh, who apparently understood history very well, in Mizerai Yehudim Mordechai. If you're talking about going up against a Jew, Hachilosol in Polifonav. Lo tuchalo, you cannot overcome the Jews. Kina falti polifanav, you will lose. They understood that in the course of Jewish history, which Haman did not understand, because he thought he could outsmart history by having the lottery, etc., you can't win. And that sets the tone for the rest of the Megillah, etc., etc. Okay? Now, again, as I said, we did six, seven words. I want to explain a few things before one. I want to get back to Chayyot, because it's the next thing you said, but I want to go back to the fact that it's eternal. It says in the Megillah, if you go, we're going to skip around a little bit. Source number 15, I'm going to skip the idea of Chayyot for a second. The Hayamim Ha'ela is coming after the story of Purim happens. Minasin, the whole Dor Vador goes out of its way to say, this will be remembered in every single generation. Mishpacha, mishpacha, every family, medina, medina, every Jewish, wherever Jews live, here, here, every city. Mimeah Purim Ha'ela, lo yavru mitoch hayudin. Purim will never be forgotten among the Jews. Vizichram lo yasuf mizamah. And the memory of Purim will never be erased. It doesn't say this about anything else. Why only Purim? And that's what he means, that going back to source number 3, your salvation was forever, and your hope is in every generation. Purim will be around in every generation. Ah, so what does that mean? It says in source 16, I'm not going to read it, okay? It says that after the coming of the Mashiach, all the other holidays will be forgotten, but the holiday of Purim will still be celebrated. Wild, right? Wild. Source 17, I just bring in to show you. We will say, Anima Amin, Emuna Shalema, we believe that the Torah can't be changed. The Torah says celebrate Pesach. What do you mean? Is that going to be Pesach after the Mashiach? So sources 18 and, no, I'm sorry, I skipped. I'll tell you the answer. The answer that's given is that's not that they won't be celebrated, but compared to the miracles that will happen in the time of Mashiach, they will dim by comparison. Okay? Every other miracle of every other holiday is about how great God was in saving, in helping the Jewish people, and God's presence was shown how great God was. Correct? Pesach, Shavuot, Matan Torah, etc., etc. God's presence will be so obvious that Pesach and Shavuot will be celebrated like minor holidays, like Purim is celebrating today. Purim is the only holiday. We got, sorry, that's Rabbi Wine, so I'm not going to take it. Where it's the only holiday which is celebrated, it's not talking about God's greatness, at least in theory. It's a Jewish survival, okay? And it's different from every other holiday. And because it's different, it's going to be celebrated not in comparison to Pesach, it's celebrated on its own merit. But then you go further, okay? If you look, when is Purim celebrated? Anybody know?
What do you mean?
What day?
Yudal.
Okay, so first of all, somebody said Yudal. Is it celebrated in Katamon and Yudalit? No. So it's not celebrated in Yudalit every year. Okay? And if you look at the Gemara, it says some people celebrated on the 11th, some people celebrated on the 12th, when it was convenient when they came in and did their business in the city. Purim wasn't celebrated on a specific day. Why not? Every other holiday is celebrated on the day that it happened. Correct? Purim had the option, based on where you were located, based on where you were convenient, etc., you celebrated different days. Why? And if you want to see where it says that, source 19, let's see. Source 18 is the Mishnah. Next one. You can read it on the 11th, you can read the Megillah, on the 12th, on the 13th, on the 14th, on the 15th. Not before, not after, but on those days. Why? So if you live in the 20th century, 21st century, you say, okay, they were very smart, they wanted to make a longer weekend. Right? So it's like we moved the holidays in America. I don't know in the countries, but I'm sure they did in other countries too. Make a long weekend, it'll be easier, right? Ironically, you know what holiday is moved around the most in the Jewish calendar? Yom HaTzmaut. But it's done for a different reason. Shabbat. Mm-hmm. The Jewish people, I mean, which is unbelievable. You're saying 98% of the people don't keep Shabbat. Doesn't make a difference. Shabbat will not be violated to celebrate Independence Day, which is different year, not now. Okay. Anyway, why is Purim celebrated on all these days? Why do you have options? Okay.
Doesn't say in the Megillah you have to read on a certain day. It says it will be celebrated.
It says, what do you mean? Look at Mishnah at 18. Megillah Nikrei Bachadasar Shnei Matzah Shloshanasar. You could have chosen the day to on the 11th of Adar, 12th of Adar. In those days, what happened was people came from the small villages and didn't know how to read the Megillah. So it said when they would get to the main town, somebody could read for them that you can read it on those days, which was Monday or Thursday. That's the day that they had the shul. And the Chazal, the rabbis, allowed them to celebrate Purim and read the Megillah on those days. Why? So you could say because it was inconvenient, they couldn't read it, etc. But it's symbolically much more. Purim is not about one day. It is about all days in the Jewish calendar. It's about the odds of war. What does it mean? Purim is the holiday where we seem not to understand what's going on. We still believe in God and we believe in the ultimate triumph. The people who lived after Haman said what he said, we're lost, we're finished. Can't happen, we're finished. There's no way out. And yet there was a way out. Now, I will try to do it. So therefore, it's celebrated in all days, in all generations. It means that in all generations, there will be holidays like Purim. What does that mean? It means that in Galut, and I say until the Beit HaMikdash we consider it like in Galut, we don't understand, there'll be many things, etc. We don't understand how God functions. And yet, we celebrate and have an emuna that we will celebrate. And that's what we're celebrating on Purim. Every single time, how do we know this? Every single time that the Jewish people were threatened, as they were threatened, they somehow got. Where do we see this? I'm trying to find a nice pasuk. Susan quoted this pasuk a couple of weeks ago. Here it says, it's the source number 26. It says, God will hide. Well, let's put this one into this. I'll come back to that in a second. 29. We're talking about in every generation. It says in the Torah, Vayomer Od Elohim, God said to Moshe, Come on, my B'nai Yisrael, Hashem Elohim, Lechem Elohim, Ram Elohim, Yisrael, 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 just because of time, Shlachai Yenem, Zeshmi Lolam, Zezekri Lador Vador. So the simple meaning is, this is my name forever, and this is my remembrance in every generation. But the word La'olam is missing what? Missing above. The word Le'alem, says the Otzer Medrashim in source number 30, says God is hidden. Right? The word Le'alem means God. In every generation, God is hidden. Okay? When does God start to be hidden in every generation?
When?
Purim. Every single generation before Purim, there was some kind of miracle in the Beit HaMikdash. There was some kind of presence of God in the Beit HaMikdash. Along comes Purim, and even though we had a second Beit HaMikdash, there was no supernatural miracles, there was no Nevi'im, there was nothing. All of a sudden, Judaism changed from the God that was ever present to the God that was always hidden. And yet, Purim proved that God is still there. It's hard to see, that's still there. And therefore, it says, okay, now, how do we, and that's the whole theme of Purim, is to reveal that which is hidden. And I'll prove it to you. What do we read on Saturday night?
Megillah.
What is it called? What's the name of Megillah?
Esther.
Megillat Esther. What does Megillat Esther mean?
Hidden.
What does the word Esther mean? Hidden. Okay. What does the word Megillah mean? Ligalot?
To reveal.
To reveal the hidden. Megillat Esther. That the nature of God in Galut is the Megillat Esther. In every Galut. And therefore, that's why he says, I'm not going to go back, keep going back to the thing, right? Don't be embarrassed, don't be, have this hope and have this emunah and galut, because God is telling you, I am there. It may not be obvious, that's why we have costumes, because the essence is covered up, but I am there, okay? And I will prove it to you, okay? Source number, by the way, everything I say is in source number 20, the Gaon, the Vilna says that from his point on in Jewish history, God is there, but he's not there. What's interesting, okay, source number 21. It says in the Megillah, Kimu v'kiblu et ha'yudim et ha'yudim alayhem, they kept the Torah. They kikimu, they observed, and kiblu, and they re-accepted the Torah, says one of the other. Says, what? Right? He says, Kimu v'kiblu. Why? The Gemara says it, and all the Mefarshim say it. They re-accepted the Torah. Why? Why did they re-accept the Torah?
There's no mountain over there.
True. That's exactly the answer.
What is it?
In a deeper sense. There's no mountain over there.
No mountain over there?
The relationship to God changed after the destruction of the first temple. God was obvious. You didn't want to believe in it, you don't have to believe in it, etc., etc. From the time of the destruction of the temple, there's no... Just like God is not in the Megillah, he's not in the Megillah unless you look for it. Where is God in the Megillah? Right? If you take any Megillah that you have, read, open it up, the Mefarshim say when it says Melech, it's referring to Ahasuerus, and when it says HaMelech, it refers to HaMelech. Okay? The beginning of every column in the Megillah, in every Megillah that's written today, except for the first one and the last two, it says HaMelech. You want to see God in the Megillah? Look for HaMelech. The point is being here is where Shoshana Yaakov Ben Achochim, where among the thorns we don't see any kind of victory, and yet the Dor Vador is still going to be every generation, we will still be able to see through those thorns the God being accepted. Again, I have many things to say. I want to talk about two more things if it's okay with you. Three more things if it's okay with you. Okay, the first one is, let's talk about Chelik, okay? It says they saw Chelik. They didn't see any other color. What is Chelik? What is Chelik? When I say Chelik, what do you think of?
Blue.
I should probably think more than blue.
Sky blue.
What?
Sky blue.
That's all you think about.
What?
Did you say the word Chelik today?
Arithmetic.
What?
Arithmetic. It's the seed, it's the sky, it's good.
Yeah, yeah, you're 2 pennies ahead of me. Where do we say you have to have tchelet?
On the tzitzis.
On tzitzis, tchelet and tzitzis.
Not even my mitzvah.
Right? You say it in Shema, right? You have to have tchelet on the tzitzit. So on that, why tchelet on the tzitzit? What is tchelet? What's so special about tchelet? So here's your answer if you want to know where it is. Source number, where is it? 13. Manish Tanach Chelet, what makes Chelet so special? We have that on the tzitzit. Yikom minei simonim, from all the other colors. Ibnei Shet Chelet, the specific color of Chelet, Domelian, is the same color as the sky. The sky, Yam Domele Rakia. Yam is the same as the, sorry, the sea, color of the sea. Color of the sea is the same as color of the sky, and the sky is right next to, it's right next to God, reminds us of God. That's the simple explanation. You want to hear something unbelievable if I haven't told you?
Sure.
Think about this. We see a blue. Somebody wants to discover what's the action of the chelet. Right? So he goes to the sea, and he swims out as far as he can swim, and he wants to see the end. Where does the chelet? Where does the chelet end? And he goes to the horizon, right? There's no end. Correct?
Okay.
Not only that, you want to see the blue. So you take the sea, put it in your hands. What do you see?
White.
No blue. It's the opposite of, if I had another hour, I could explain it. Opposite of what we call tachlis. We call tachlis chelet. It's the opposite. It's something that we search after, and we can't see. That blue is not existing. Same thing in the sky. You went in a plane. See any blue in the sky?
No.
No. Okay? So it's the opposite of what we think. If we only look close enough, we'll get to God. It's Tchelet symbolizes that which is past what we can understand, past what we can see in our hands. Okay? I'll go one step further. Look at the next source, it'll blow your mind. Okay? And that's talking about Esther, the the hiddenness. It says, "He Luz Shetzofim Bo Tela." Where was Pchelet made? In a city called Luz. What was Luz so special? Luz Shebasam Chera Velo Bilbula Nebuchadnezzar Nachriva. All the kings tried to destroy this one city of Luz, and they were unsuccessful. Ad Malach HaMavet. You always say the Malach HaMavet wins in the end. Ein Lo Meshut La Horba. Right? No death was not found in Luz. People lived forever in Luz. But when they got bored, they couldn't live anymore, they went out of Luz and they died. Okay? So Luz is a symbol of that which is unattainable, that we can't see. Right? And that is what Purim is all about. We can't understand how soldiers were killed on October 7th. We can't understand why would God put us through after 75 years of the Medina, just coming around to be, friends with all the Arabs. Why? Okay? So that's one thing I want to understand. Luz is something, Chelet is something that is unknowable beyond the horizon. Not the horizon. That's number one. Number two, I don't remember the second one, I'll give you the third one. It says, Gam Charvona Zechulato. Why Charvona? It's a little bit similar to what we had last week. Gam Charvona Zechulato. Charvona is there at the beginning, plotting against the Jews or against Achashverosh. And Charvona is there at the end, at that moment, key moment. There will always be somebody like Charvona at the key moment. I talk about Richard Nixon's mother. Richard Nixon was a terrible anti-Semite, right? But his mother told him, listen to this, because he's written it, there will be a time that the Jews, he was very religious, Christian, there will be a time that the Jews are going to need your help, Richard, and when that happens, you help them, okay? And of course, Yom Kippur War, Kapan and he went against Kissinger, whatever, those movie group, okay? The point is, there's always somebody like Charvona. What's interesting even is, you look at Charvona at the beginning of the Megillah, the word Charvona, he's the biggest Baal Tshuva, I think, in the Megillah, the word Charvona is spelled with an Aleph at the end. Chet, Resh, Bet, Vav, Nun, Aleph. At the end of the Megillah, right, how's it spelled? A Hey at the end. What's the difference? Because of the...
I don't know that, but if words, even Hebrew words came from Arabic, they have an aleph.
That's true. So but the word, right? It's the word Charvona.
It's not ours.
Charvona, but it's not Arabic. This is before there was Arabs. This is way before the Arabs.
I understand it's not ours.
The word Charvona at the beginning comes from the word lachrov, to destroy. But at the end, with a hey, it means Cherev means Charvona, means who the word Bona, Bet Nun Hei, is to build. The same person who wanted to destroy became the builder. Now I'm going to say something. It had to be the same gallows that was meant for Haman was used by, sorry, meant for Mordechai was used for Haman. It's God is showing us it's not the gallows that per se will be the killers. You think that it's the gallows. You think that it's the, that it's the specific thing. I can turn those gallows in a second to the destroying Haman instead of destroying Mordechai. That's why he says, hey, you have to get as drunk, right? As drunk on Purim as what? Anybody know? It sounds absurd. What? Adlo Yada. Adlo Yada. What does Adlo Yada mean? You don't know the difference between Haman should be cursed or Haman should be blessed.
Right.
Mordechai should be cursed. What does that mean? It means from our perspective, we can't possibly curse Mordechai or bless Haman. But when you get drunk, you can't distinguish between the two. God is saying, the very thing that you think is good could be evil, and the very thing you think is evil could be good. Remember we had last week, the taste of a pork is shibuta, right? The taste of this, it's not the taste. The very thing that you thought was going to destroy us comes to save us. And I don't know how the answer is. You'll come back to me in 6 months. We'll look back at what's going on now. And we'll see the very thing that we thought was going to destroy us will be there to help us. And that's the message of Purim. Every single week, every single year, we have Purims. This year it's a little more obvious with October 7th. But every year, Jews are trying to destroy America. Jews are on persona non grata. Never happened before for the last 300 years. Right? Only this year. There's a reason for it. We don't know. The Emuna, we believe God is in the shadows, let alone. And that's the message of, and we only got to the halfway point, but that's the message of Shoshana Yafo.
And I know you're getting these back for 6 months, but we're doing the U.S. elections for president.
Okay. All right. But we don't know what that's going to lead to. If Saudi Arabia makes peace and throws out the Hamas and whatever. I'm not even talking politics now. I'm talking about the fact that just because we don't understand doesn't mean we shouldn't have belief. That's happened to us too much in our history to say we don't believe. And that's the message of Purim. That's why I brought us here tonight. Megillat Esther. Our goal is to Megillat Legalot Et Esther. To take the Esther and make it and try to find the meaning within the hidden. Okay? I thank you all.
If anyone wants to ask me, show it to me.